And gentlemen, jury, the prosecution is not going to get that man today. No, because I'm going to get him.
This edition of the Hagman Report. It is Monday, October 9th, 2017. I want to welcome everyone to our program. Thank you so much for listening, tuning in to our flagship program, the Hagman Report. Of course, we've got 5 hours of programming per day, 9 to 10 Eastern Time, the Doug Hagman Show, and then 2 to 3, John and Joe. And, of course, the flagship show, you're listening to it and watching it. And that's 7 to 10, of course. Tonight we've got a good show planned out for you. First hour, we're going to be covering some news and analyzing some information that we have. And, of course, hours 2 and 3, we've got guests coming up, including Greg Jackson in hour 2. And from there, well, just stay tuned. We've got a fantastic lineup for you. And Billy Crone on hour 3, by the way. A couple of things. But you know what? Before we get into, but by the way, I would urge everyone to subscribe to our YouTube channel, if you would please. The reason being is, of course, there are people who have subscribed that have been unsubscribed, and you know how it goes. And there's power in numbers. There's power in numbers, and of course, the Christian conservatives are under assault every day. The conservatives, the moral conservatives, the political conservatives, we are under assault every single day. And that would help us out by you subscribing to our YouTube channel as well as our social networking feed. We're going to be doing more and more on our social networking feed, kind of not feeding the beast, but using the beast's own tools in an information war against them. So that's kind of what we're going to be doing there. Before we get into the show, Joe, I just want to, of course, traditionally, from our mailbag, what do you think?
Absolutely.
I just want to keep. Okay. Not right now. Only because there's some. I mean, it's good to go, but it's not.
Well, you'll see this later.
Yeah. Okay, so from the mailbag, and I want to thank everyone who sends us both emails and hard copy, postal mail. We read everything. In fact, it's got a chain of custody, shall we say. And we really appreciate your kind words and, of course, your support. But so from the mailbag, this from Bev B. And I remember meeting Bev B. I believe it was she's from Dublin, Ohio. All right. But I remember meeting Bev B. She writes, now this goes back to July. And the reason I pulled this one out is because I should have done this, actually July 30th. I should have done this a while back. And she writes, thanks for keeping the public informed. I would have lost all hope for the years I've been fighting myself to wake up my family. You have the same outrage for what the, quote, progressives have done to this country. Stay healthy, stay alert, and God bless you and this country. With sincere appreciation, Bev B. Thank you, Bev B. And thank you so much for your. This does really make a difference to us. This I found extremely. I just really laughed. This tickled me. I don't know if you can see this card. It's a. It's actually from Trader Joe's. And it says Super Sleuth Detective Agency, and it's got a it's kind of a cartoon about a PI agency, and this of course is from Christine M. I gotta be careful not to give the whole names out. Blessings, Doug and Joe. Without your help, I would have been clueless. Thanks, and thanks for all that you do to keep us informed. But I just love the card, and this is going to go up on our bulletin board. And by the way, we keep all of the notes. And then this one, got to give a shout-out to Victoria B. from Vancouver, British Columbia. Thank you so much. Now, this has me stumped. Remember Johnny Carson? This has, for those listening on Global Star, BTR, you know. Anyway, this had me stumped. I'm not sure if it's a hostage note or what, but here it is right here. This has me stumped. It's a very short note. I'll read it verbatim. Nice job, Hagman. Very mature. Your wife must be so proud of you. Signed, Victoria. I don't have a clue what that means.
You should, apparently.
I didn't ask my wife if she's proud. And I take it was meant for me. So, Victoria B. from Vancouver, British Columbia. Is it the water? Up there? The air? I don't know. But at any rate, and she spent, you know, she spent some money to send this, right? I mean, it's not exactly cheap to send an international mail thing. But
please so, send a clarification.
Too. Anyway, so I thought that was rather funny, and of course we have a box of mail the size of one of the postal boxes, and we just thank you for writing in, and some of the letters are so incredible. We spend hours reading, and I mean, I've laughed, I've cried, you know how that saying goes, but it's just amazing. So thank you for engaging with us. Now I'm going to open it up with this, and then Joe, you can take it from wherever you want to take it. But Antifa are receiving military training in Syria. Okay, now I've got this on, and I'm going somewhere with this. I mentioned this during my morning show this morning. The progressive left is receiving training from ISIS and Islamic terrorists, and they're actually mostly what this is referring to is the European Antifa, the European, shall we say, revcoms, if you will. But having said that, there are members, according to some FBI reports that you're not going to see, where Antifa members here in the United States are actually going to Europe and then crossing the Syrian border to receive military training from members of ISIS. And you're going to find this happening more and more. And this, now, again, primarily you're looking at the so-called anti-fascism/fascism movement in Europe, but it's beginning to trend here in the United States. And I do believe you're going to see more and more of this and hear more and more about this. In fact, I think InfoWars reported on this. In fact, Prison Planet reported on this, where security agencies are concerned that the Antifa members will in fact continue their revolution at home once they return. And in fact, that is what is suggested. Something to think about too, and I want to mention this very, 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 very quickly. You know, Joe, you like the NFL. People, well, at one point liked the NFL, and many people like football. You know, the kneeling, the players kneeling. Okay. Now, consider this. And of course, Vice President Pence walking out on a football game this past weekend.
And if I can jump in, because I know what people are saying. I've seen reports that, you know, this was some kind of a setup that he went there in order to walk out. And I've been, following the NFL closely. And I say close, I mean, more so than the last few years. And, part of that is watching, you know, the players kneel on these different events and seeing the reporting. And two, they obviously in the beginning of the game, it's like to show different people that are there. And from what I can tell, Pence has been in quite a few games, especially lately. So this is not a out of, an odd behavior type thing for him. He attends these.
It's on a regular basis. Yeah, it's not out of character.
No, it's not.
Well, I just want to make it clear, in my personal opinion, that this kneeling and whatever the objection would be during the national anthem has nothing to do with racism, but this is really giving a big middle finger to the President of the United States. That's what this is all about. It's a big middle finger to President Donald Trump. It's a big middle finger to white America. And it's really intellectual and moral condescension and cowardice, in my view. You look at the NFL owners, and you look at the players, owning a football team, a pro football team, is a cash cow. Taxpayers subsidize the game.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Think about this. Yeah, yeah. In fact, there are 12 stadiums in the United States, including the one in Buffalo. The taxpayers paid for, and the owners actually made money off of the building of the stadiums. And they've got the nerve to charge the average American, well, to charge anyone who can afford a ticket. It costs, on average, it costs a family of four anywhere between $400 and $500 to attend a football game.
Yeah, and that's the reason,
right.
And Eric, correct me if I'm wrong, the reason that they started doing these tax deals with the city and the stadiums is because back in the 90s and before that, you had teams that would want to move out of the stadiums. One of the more well-known ones was the Cleveland Browns in the late 90s went to the Baltimore and became the Baltimore Ravens. And I believe the cities wanted these contracts with their teams, so a way to do it was to put taxpayer money up and have the city own the stadiums was a way to try to keep the owners there. I believe
and I think that's true.
Or that's been the excuse.
That's been the excuse indeed. Well, the NFL right now, the owners are making a ton of money. Consider that the average seat, and I'm not talking, and I'm talking about the nosebleed seat. The nosebleed seats are $85 for the average seat. Beer, $10. Parking is around 30 on average, so you're looking at right there, you know, 100 and a half approximately, just to attend a game. And you've got the nerve of these elite players giving the middle finger to our president, our country, and everything it stands for. And I'm tired of the Christian. By the way, I'm very, very tired. If you are a Christian out there and you say, well, you know, this is, the flag is idol worship. Okay. Get over yourself. All right. In my view, you've got there's something not firing right. If that's how you think, it's about respect. It's not about idol worship. It's about simple respect. Apparently your mommy and daddy didn't teach you right when you were growing up. But having said that, and yeah, I'm talking to the Christian out there who's saying, well, we shouldn't worship the flag. No one's worshiping the flag. Anyway, it just gets me because sometimes I believe Christians were our own worst enemies sometimes. And conservatives too. But consider this about the NFL, and then we can go wherever. 70% of the capital costs of the NFL stadiums are paid for by the taxpayers. And as I said, a dozen stadiums across the country have actually made money for the owners, paid for by the taxpayers. Let me just example. Paul Allen, Seattle Seahawks owner, co-founder of Microsoft with Bill Gates. He's one of the world's richest men. Washington State residents, the taxpayers, paid $390 million of the $560 million it cost to build the stadium. Plus, he's making a ton of money on the backside, back end of that. Minnesota Vikings owner, $506 million that he received from the taxpayers of Minnesota. New Orleans, the Mercedes-Benz Stadium, Tom Benson. You know how much he got for that stadium? $1 billion. $1 billion. That's what you and I pay. Well, the taxpayers pay. Assuming you're a taxpayer. And then you've got the so-called conservative Bobby Jindal, depending on
where you're from.
Sends he had actually sent the New Orleans Saints $6 million, or promised them, signed a bill, shall we say, $6 million per year just not to move out of the state. The NFL league commissioner, $40 million a year, making $40 million a year. Can you believe that? The NFL commissioner. Now, it's not the fact that we're against making a profit. It's the fact that the tax subsidies are an issue here. Now, one more thing. You want to talk about the kneelers, the so-called kneelers in the NFL. Let's look at them for a moment. And if you go to a website called NFLarrest.com, it will tell you that since the year 2000, the NFL players, the people who are disrespecting the flag and the anthem and the country and giving the middle finger to the president, of the players since 2000, 218 have been arrested and convicted of DUI, another 100 on drug violations, 98 drug crimes, that is, another 98 convicted of domestic violence. There were 74 convictions for assaults, 44 disorderly conduct, and 34 gun violations since the year 2000. And those, of course, are the people who are giving the middle finger to not just white America, but to the, specifically to the President of the United States. And that, to me, is a sin. Now, real quick, and then I want to just mention Las Vegas. Joe, there was on Wednesday, there was and I caught this, and I mentioned this morning. I just want to mention this again. I don't know how this kind of flew under my radar for a couple of days, but it was last week when Sheriff Joseph Lombardo had a press conference. There was a question asked of him. And the question was, do you think that this was all accomplished on his own, meaning the shooter in Las Vegas? The answer was kind of convoluted, and he said some things and then took it back, you know, because he didn't want to make this paddock sound like a hero or superhero thing. But here's the money line. It would be hard for me to believe that. In other words, it'd be hard for him to believe that he acted alone. And I agree with that. The Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department, they know the motive behind the attacks. They know that he didn't act alone. They know that there is a conspiracy by its very definition involved in this. But the FBI will not allow them to release the motive because it implicates, there's a lot of implications here, not the least of which is potential gun, a potential Barry Seal kind of proprietary organization going on, as well as, some other things that include, money laundering. And this goes back to his days at Lockheed Martin as well. And if you think that he made his millions off playing video poker, you get another thing coming. Where's the best place to launder money? Of course, it's a casino. And also, by the way, I'm not going to repeat this, Joe. I decided not to. I did go over, I believe I did, either was on the Pat, I was on KFAQ this morning with Pat Campbell. Well, you know what? Here are the facts that we know, and then you take it from here. It was a week ago Sunday, October 1st, 2017, at 10:05 local time when the first shots rang out. There were initially the information that we have. Now, the public information said two bullets were fired at two aviation fuel tanks at McCarran International Airport. According to the information I have, there were seven. None, difference of five shots. And, of course, the target was the Route 91 Music Festival. That was the venue. And I think we can all agree that the shots began during the performance, the closing performance, Jason Aldean. The timeline that I put together through numerous research is very simple. At 10:05, seven shots rang out. Two struck the fuel tanks. The shooter then dumps four 100-round magazines into the crowd. The average gap between the bursts of gunfire is between 25 and 26 seconds. The average distance is from 463 yards to 490 yards, about 450 meters. At 10:10, the shooter fires five 100-round magazines. again, with an average delay of 25 to 26 seconds between the shot volleys. At 10:12, the first two officers arrived on the 31st floor and announced that the shooting was right above them. So you're looking at a 7-minute response time from the first shot to the police arrival on the fourth floor below.
And just go to ahead. Add to your timeline,
just
because there was a news conference that was given just about an hour and 20 minutes ago by the Las Vegas Sheriff's Department, which they give a new timeline for the security guard. They say 6 minutes before Stephen Paddock opened fire on the crowd is when the security guard was shot.
All right.
So I mean, that's an interesting.
Wait a second. Okay, say that again, because I want to add this into the timeline here.
With the press conference the Las Vegas Sheriff's Department gave today, they were saying that 6 minutes before Paddock opened fire on concert goers in Las Vegas is when he shot the security guard. So the security guard was 9:55
local time.
Right.
So 6 minutes before anything happened.
Right. Yep.
Okay.
The security guard.
And this is according to Joseph Lombardo?
Yep. And he said that the security guard was responding to a door alarm initially believed to be Paddock's, but was not his door.
Right.
But which, it could have been the adjoining room.
I've got an issue with that. I've got a number of issues with respect to that. All right.
And then they updated the escape plan. We do not know whether he planned to cause harm outside of the Mandalay Bay in response to an update on the escape plan.
Okay, last week I was, and just to fill you in and everyone else in, last week I was told that that was not a suicide note, which of course that came out today or yesterday or over the weekend, that it was supposedly the trajectories of the gun, that very, or of the bullets, that very, might very well be, but I've received information that there was documentation taken there from that room that included both ISIS style, not ISIS stamped, this is from ISIS, but ISIS Islamic literature, whether or not that had anything to do with the calculations, whether it was, you know, the calculations were ISIS inspired, because we know that they've published calculations such as that before, ISIS has, or the Islamic terrorists. We know that through the Al-Batar publications as well as Inspire magazine and other Islamic publications. So we know that to be true. But in addition to that, some of the doodlings, drawings, whatever you want to call them, were some pretty elaborate escape plans as well. And finally, there is some information in addition to the Islamic component to the documentation. There was some references made to Antifa. When I say Antifa, I'm talking about the RevCom or the communist movement in this country. And I'm going to just stop right there. It was not just one single piece of paper with calculations. There were documents. And I mean, when I say documents, I'm talking about papers, multiple papers that existed in under his control that included those things. So that's interesting. So what you're saying, 9:59 then, it would be, you would say 6 minutes prior to the first shots ringing out is when the reported shooting of the security guard, and his name, of course, is Jesus Campos. All right. Because we have, according to the official timeline, Jesus Campos arrived at the Paddock Suite at 10:17, which would put it 12 minutes after the initial shots were fired. Now we have a difference of 18 minutes. Interesting. And 23 firearms, AR-15, AR-10, AR-47, and variants were found in his room, including a revolver and a large amount of ammunition. Now, bottom line here is, by the way, the hotel people have been warned not to talk to anybody about this incident. The Opera software used by the hotel staffs, many hotels, by the way, as well as the valet software, that's been expunged or otherwise grabbed by the FBI. And the It's based on information, again, there was a pallet, if you will. Imagine one of the carts used by the bell carts, you know, filled with the server or the servers with surveillance equipment or surveillance pieces, as well as the surveillance storage taken from the Mandalay Bay Hotel. So there you have it. Oh, and one last thing, and I want to give a shout out to Alicia Powell. And she was on with you folks last week. The Department of Justice wants records of Seth Rich murder released. Did you talk to Alicia about that last week? Because this appears on the WorldNet Daily.
No, we didn't.
This I found very interesting. Because all of this overlaps, I believe, and not necessarily the shooting in and of itself, but the when you're looking at the Department of Justice, the FBI, their activities and such, there's the same people within the Department of Justice who have covered up Fast and Furious, for example, are still there and covering up even Vegas to some extent. But the DOJ, in this case, wants the records of Seth Rich murder released, but getting fought by who? By the U.S. Attorney's Office for Washington, D.C.
That's interesting.
Yeah, very interesting. Go ahead.
We will be right back after this network break. Don't go anywhere. This is the Monday, October 9th, 2017 edition of Hagmann Report. We'll be right back with one more segment of news and current events, followed by Greg Jackson in hour number two, and Pastor Billy Crone in hour three. Stay tuned.
Visit HagmanReport.com for the news and articles that matter most. Stay tuned. We will be right back. In a thrilling series of novels, T.C. Joseph takes us into the lives of three families who struggle to maintain normal lives in a world where conspiracy theory and Bible prophecy collide. T.C. Joseph's viewpoint of alternative history and understanding of prophetic events will change your view of the world and the events on our horizon. Kirkus Review states, readers of end times fiction will be hard-pressed to find it done more intriguingly than this. Extremely readable and fast-paced. Blue Wink Reviews boldly states, fans of Tim LaHaye's Left Behind series and Tom Parada's The Leftovers will find this thought-provoking series absolutely riveting. Order your copies of T.C. Joseph's This Generation series from Amazon.com. Book 1, Precipice. Book 2, Pentecost. And Book 3, Penance.
These uncertain times, it makes sense to have a sustainable backup method to cook food and boil water. If your current plan includes using a fuel-burning stove or cooking over an open fire, then there's a much better way. The Minuteman Rocket Stove is a biomass-burning cooking stove that only requires small quantities of sticks and twigs for fuel. The Minuteman Stove is easy to use, smokeless, portable, powerful, and sustainable. For the finest in survival cooking stoves and fire starters made right here in the USA, go to MinutemanStove.com. That's MinutemanStove.com.
You may never look at your city, town, or its people the same way ever again. Stained by Blood, a murder investigation based upon a true story by private investigator Douglas J. Hagmann. Using the character Mark Stiles, Hagmann takes you on a journey behind the scenes where the homicide becomes a secondary to an underworld of satanic ritual abuse, child abduction, and even mind-controlled experimentation. A world dismissed as conspiracy by those who want to keep its secrets hidden. Exposing the dangers, denials, and deceptions. For 5 years, a brutal killer remained on the loose, free to kill again. As Mark struggles to navigate the maze of bizarre twists and untangle a web of deeply hidden secrets kept by some of the most powerful and influential people in his community and beyond. Stained by Blood. Order your copy of this engaging novel today at HagmannandHagmann.com and click on the link. Stained by Blood.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to this Monday edition of the Hagman Report. We have new information on the Vegas timeline, as well as something I want to get into. The California wildfires are pretty bad. They are extensive. They're all across the state, from Los Angeles all the way up through San Francisco, and a number of new fires were started last night around 8 or 9 p.m. local time, and then spread really rapidly. There's a huge weather pattern up there that has these wind gusts anywhere from 30 to 60 miles an hour, and it was sustained for 24 hours starting last evening. So you have kind of a worst case scenario, really dry land, fires being started in odd places or starting in odd places, and you have this windstorm that is pushing the fires, and they're already saying it's one of the worst in state's history, and I don't believe even a small percentage of this is contained. Now, I haven't looked at too many maps. I've seen some of the maps that have the different spots of where the fires are in California, but I know that a lot of overnight evacuations happened. People had to leave their house in the middle of the night. Hospitals and schools were also evacuated in some parts of the state. So it's a really serious situation there. There's been confirmed reports of deaths,
arson.
People missing.
Arson. I have no doubt in my mind that some of these were, not all, but some were arson.
Well, that's what's being looked into, is at least the suspicious nature of the timing of three fires that seem to triangulate over a 200-mile radius into these some more populated areas of Napa Valley and Sonoma County, and we'll have to wait to see what if anything changes there. But yeah, there was a Al-Qaeda Islamic magazine that's been published and continues to be published that talked about this years ago, and it's talked about it as recently as
we
this
have seen
year in January.
Over. Yeah.
Talks about, you know, setting fires in these places that are prone to wildfires right outside of residential areas and communities.
Well,
so that's being looked into.
And I think that we have to think bigger. In all of this, we have to take a look at this and think bigger. Whether it's the shooting in Vegas or whether it is the collective mass shootings that we've seen over the past decade and a half, or even since the Lubby's shooting way back when. When was that? 81. To the present, I think we have to think bigger. And I think that we have to look at this now with respect to the fires and the other mass casualty and destructive events taking place. I don't want to ascribe maliciousness with respect to the fires where there is none, but I'm not so naive to believe that you can have the timing with the fires and the locations in such a manner that would cause massive destruction, it being just a coincidence or an accident. I don't believe in coincidences to that extent. So, and one more thing I just want to as well. You know, we're hearing this ramping up from these anarchist groups, these seditious groups like Antifa, from other Indivisible, Black Lives Matter, whatever it is. Do not in any way, shape, or form underestimate the what Chris Kabats and John Guandalo have called the Red Green Axis, AXIS, and others as well, Randall Terry and others that we've had on our program. They've spoken about this alliance between the Islamics, the Muslims, and the communists. And I say communists because I mean communists. And I'll say this as well. The supporters of Bernie Sanders, it amazes me how many otherwise sane and rational people follow or support Bernie Sanders. Now, I will say this. I do believe that the Democratic primary was stolen inside the DNC by Hillary Clinton from Bernie Sanders. Is that troublesome? Absolutely. Even though it's Bernie Sanders, the fact that our sacrosanct election process was that was done within the election process by the Clintonites and the DNC and Debbie Wasserman Schultz. But to me, and Joe, kick in on this, anyone who says that they are followers of Bernie Sanders, an avowed socialist, I have a problem with that. How in the world can you live and work and exist in a representative republic called the United States of America under the United States Constitution and support a socialist or a communist in the form of Hillary Clinton? I want to ask you that. How is that possible?
I don't know. You know, I want to go back to something you talked about earlier, because we talked about this off air a few months ago.
Yes.
The Antifa training in Syria.
Yes.
And John, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe Brandon House reported on Antifa training in Venezuela.
Yes. Oh, yes.
About 3 weeks to a month ago on our show. And I saw over the summer.
We have to pull that soundbite out.
Some of the videos of what they were talking about with Syria. And I don't know, I mean, I'd have to see more evidence. I don't know what you saw, and I don't know what Brandon saw, but I believe that there is the possibility that this is going on. It does seem a little far-fetched, but at the same time, nothing's out of the realm of possibilities with the people and the funding behind.
This comes from FBI sources, federal sources within the FBI, and this goes to... And Joe, to answer your question, this goes from the rank and file of the FBI agents directly to people like Randall Terry. And there's documentation, that exists and under the Holder and Lynch Department of Justice, this was, actually held back from, this was known under those two, DOJ heads of, the Department of Justice, but it was held back from the public, and the FBI had reported on this, and yet they declined, the Department of Justice declined even to authorize prosecutions of those people coming back into this country avowing to disrupt our electoral and our process of civilization, if you will, the larger sense. So it amazes me how this, it's just, I'm amazed, but I don't know if that answers your question, but it's the FBI keeps track. Look, the FBI keeps track of everything. And by the way, the Paddock, you know, it's in the news where let me ask you this. If you were to ask the average person on the street, how many financial transactions did, Paddock send over, via casino wire transfers or transfers, via the casino? What would it be? How many have we heard?
Well, we've only heard about the most recent one, the $127,000 transfer to the Philippines to the Mary Lou Danley.
He's conducted, at a minimum 200 such transfers. Not necessarily of that amount, but, the FinCEN unit, the Financial Crimes Unit, looking into, upwards of 200 suspicious activity reports. 200, 200. And again, this is not done by video poker.
I saw that number somewhere else in a report or
open source.
It was about it was over 200 reports of Steve Paddock at the casino or in the casino. It was like a Las Vegas file apparently they had on him. And it said over 200 plus reports of Paddock, but he didn't interact with people at the casino or something like that. It was a real, I'll have to show you, because it was really strange.
These are 200 monetary transactions.
Okay, yeah, this wasn't specific to monetary transactions, right, from what I could tell.
Well, because, and of course, you know, yeah, you've got, more and more, I'm looking at this, and I have nothing, and this is pure speculation on my part, I've got nothing to base this on, but I'm looking at Paddock as being involved. If I were to take a guess at this, now this based on information that I've been told, on balance, if I was to say, you know, somebody put a gun to my head and said, look, I want you to give me your best guess scenario on this, I would say that that Mr. Paddock did, in fact, lead a separate dark life. I do believe that he was engaged. If this is my personal opinion now, based on nothing, based on fact, this is all speculation. I would suspect that he would was involved in some sort of proprietary black operation or proprietary operation. When I say proprietary, I'm talking about a off-the-books intelligence operation that may have dovetailed with Fast and Furious. Consider the location. Consider that. You can't take the location, the geographic out of, and consider where the Fast and Furious was really based out of and who was involved in that. So all of that. So I do believe, and especially you've got to, in a situation like that, you've got to also launder the money. But all of that aside, what's the end result going to be? And I believe that the end result here is going to be, among other things, the disarming of the, or the attempted disarming of the American population. Because I don't believe this will be the last. I believe that we're only seeing the start of this. I do believe that in the near term, you're going to see another type of shooting like this. And it may not be a concert venue. It might be a game, or it might be, but it's going to be a high number count. And they're going to get more frequent. I do believe that to be the case.
I agree. And, it's unfortunate, but for whatever reason, there's a lot of unanswered questions out there that I'm not sure that we'll ever see answered. A lot of people are asking, why is there no security camera footage?
Oh, there is.
Of, why hasn't it been released to the public? Why aren't they showing?
Because the FBI's got it.
You know, the months, the days, the weeks, the hours leading up to the shooting.
And what day did he check into the hotel?
Okay. I got an update on this from, excuse me, a Twitter of Lois
Loomer.
Right. She was at the press
conference.
Laura Loomer. She was at the press conference today.
Okay.
And she tweeted this about the question. She asked the question whether the FBI timeline of Steve Paddock had been changed since the valet receipts show a September 25th check-in date, and we have the room service receipts from the 27th when the FBI and the police said he did not come till the 28th.
I have an answer to that, by the way, but go ahead.
And she said that the response from the sheriff was he became very flustered and angry and said, please stop asking your question. She was asking if the timeline had changed from the 28th to the 25th of the actual check-in.
Wow. All right. All right. So that's a non-answer. So we really don't have anything more to add on that. All right. And this, why is all of this important? And why are we looking at this? Why are we talking 8 days out here about this? And I find it interesting. Let me ask you this, because I know you've been on the open source and stuff. Has there been a list of the names of victims?
Yeah, that came out on Tuesday, I believe. There was a number of,
because I was out for a while and I didn't see any open source stuff for a while.
Yeah, last week they had some websites put all the names up.
Okay.
All the pictures and even some of the backstory.
Okay.
Behind what happened.
So we have a list of those who are deceased from this.
Yes.
Okay. Good. All right. Again, the only reason I was curious about that is, it's usually typical, and when I didn't hear anything more about it, I was concerned. Now, what about the main shareholder and CEO of Mandalay Bay? The Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia, Mandalay CEO, sells 500,000 shares, MG of the parent company, MGM, a week or so before the actual shooting?
Yeah.
We
addressed this a little bit last week.
All right.
It wasn't just him. There were others.
Right.
Also the CEO of MGM.
James,
three separate times.
Right.
Sold stock between July and September.
Correct. July 31st.
The most being his last transaction was like $8 million worth, leaving him only about 20% of the stock he had in MGM left.
Correct. You're absolutely 100% correct by memory. So that's good. Okay.
And then it's also the Saudis own the first or the top four floors of the Mandalay Bay, if I remember correctly.
I think that three,
this
three
four
or,
seasons
yeah,
it is.
Yeah.
And it's restricted off limit access to the public and
correct.
And others.
And I find that rather interesting. Look, it doesn't mean, what does it mean? I don't know. But when you take all of the facts and combine them, the things that we know about and you combine them, and then you mix some, non-open source, some potential, private information together, I really think what we have here is a reluctance to admit the motive, and the motive is going to speak to something much larger than the American people can handle or the majority of the public will be able to accept. And it's more, of course, it's I believe it's in part at least, based on what I've heard, the Antifa movement is involved as well as the Islamic component as well. So you might think that that's absolutely absurd, but when you compare that to the potential proprietary nature of his activities, acting as perhaps as a proprietary of some black ops, then it all kind of makes sense. The number of weapons makes sense. The fact that this guy was collecting weapons over how many years. The fact that he's a multimillionaire and supporting members of his family. How'd you like to have an uncle like that? Minus the shooting, of course. You know,
yeah, sure.
But
not
see,
all of us work at Taco Bell like his brother said.
Yeah. And again, it's well beyond the video poker winnings or gambling winnings or even the real estate timing of the real estate winnings or profits, that is. So all of this we're keeping our eyes on, and of course we are filling in our own timeline based on open source as well as whatever information we get from our sources within Las Vegas. And I will repeat this, if you are if you're a member of the Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department and or the Clark County Sheriff's Office, you want to provide information, confidential information, send an email to now listen carefully, send an email to tips@homelandsecurityus.com. That's tips@homelandsecurityus.com. One more time, tips@homelandsecurityus.com. That is only for law enforcement officers who want to supply information. Now, I will not give out your name upon receipt of this. It will not go anywhere. Your name will not go anywhere. However, I must be able to identify you, so you must be able to provide your bona fides. If you're unwilling to do that, if you just say, well, I'm a police officer with Las Vegas Police Department, but I'm not going to tell you who I am, well, I'm sorry, I'm not going to take that information. But if you're willing to tell me who you are and then provide me with the information, then I'm willing to listen. And that email one more time is tips@homelandsecurityus.com.
All right. Moving forward here, or I guess backwards to what we were talking about, you said that you don't think there'll be any security camera footage released. Also, the police on Friday or Saturday stated that the note, what many were calling a suicide note, that was left on a table that can be seen in one of the pictures of his body, in the lower half of his body on the ground, was a note of trajectories, saying you know, he's got this weapon, he's got a, you know.
Yeah, we discussed that, but there are many other
easier ways to do this. But why tell us what's on the note? If it's just trajectories, why not show the note? Which they haven't done, they won't do. They continue to tell us, you know, what's on things. There was also a prostitute, an unnamed prostitute, that was interviewed and said the guy liked violent rape fantasies and was a 9/11 conspiracy theorist. That came out on the Daily Mail.
Oh, that's good. That's good. Okay,
Saturday.
There we go. Now we've got our narrative building.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so obviously he is a listener to InfoWars or a viewer of InfoWars and perhaps even a listener to this program. And now we've got the despicable, deplorable, the right-wing conspiracy theorists, nutjobs mm-hmm. like us and Alex Jones and other similar programs and websites. Here it is. And, of course, this will speak to the censorship of programs like this, and this will also speak to, of course, the control lobby or the gun aspect as well. So now there it is. It's building, and I wouldn't look tomorrow. But I'm telling you, the documentation, in addition to the trajectories, I can guarantee you there was ISIS-related and Antifa-related, and I'm talking broadly, found in that, in his control, under his control. And that's
well, yeah, and I want to get into that again here in a minute. Also on Saturday, we heard reports and saw the room service receipt where it said number of guests 2, the date, September 27th, who's the room registered to, Stephen Paddock, where a number of food items were ordered totaling almost $90. And on ABC on Saturday, they ran a piece about how the police are frustrated with no clear motive, where they reported that he, Stephen, the shooter, would pretend to talk to people in his room. He pretended to talk to people and even ordered food to show there was 2 people when there really was nobody else. They went out of their way to say this. We played the audio on the Hagman Daily Show today.
Are you serious?
Yeah. And we can, okay. I mean, we can play that audio. I can send it.
So wait
there.
A second. So the story is he created an imaginary friend.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly
and
what
ordered
they said.
Room service for a man.
And pretended to talk to somebody.
Okay.
Pretended is
pretended.
What they
said. All right.
So, you know, are they shaping the narrative to excuse away some of the behavior? Maybe.
Oh, my word.
Okay. But this is why we're so frustrated. We don't get the security camera footage, right? We don't get the, you know, we don't get to see any of this evidence. We're all told this is what it is. And don't forget, the guy had, and allegedly was creating a video of himself doing this while it happened. Are we ever going to even get the audio from that video? Probably not. That's
wow.
why it's so frustrating.
And you know, it's difficult to even know who to believe. And look, I've been sent very, and thank you, everyone, the listeners, for sending me the photographs of his body. You know, one from the waist up, one from the waist down. Of course, with him reportedly committing suicide, with a gun from a forensic point of view, you know, there's a big deal about the shell casings not having blood, not being covered in blood. Well, they wouldn't be because blood would wick on the carpet underneath the shell casings. And if authentic, the one picture of him from the waist up, if that was him, if that was an authentic image, and that was verified by the LVMPD. I wouldn't have a problem with that just based on that one picture. You'd need more, but just on that one picture alone being a self-inflicted gunshot wound, through the mouth, perhaps, given the exit wound on the back and of course the pooling of the blood and congealing of the blood. So from at least my training and from a forensic point of view, I don't have a problem with that image as being what they say it is. Now, as far as it being what they say it is, I don't know. Can I authenticate it? No. It hasn't been authenticated? No. Has anyone said, oh yeah, that, I took that, you know, I'm the crime scene photographer, I took that photograph, and, that did come from the LVPD and it was leaked. Well, we haven't seen that, but it's not inconsistent, at least. So those people are saying, well, they're, you know, that it's inconsistent with the suicide based on certain observations, even the position of the gun. I wouldn't read too much into that, given the fact that, at least from the picture I saw, given the fact that it's very possible upon a response, a police officer might have kicked the gun away, or that's just where it landed. I don't know, because you don't know what's in the background or in the foreground. It's a very cropped picture, so you know.
I wouldn't even guess. Difficult to tell. The officers, it's usually standard operating procedure, dead or alive or indifferent, to move the weapon away, just in case, just as a precaution.
Right.
I also wanted to ask you this. Seeing that we have a lack of information about the motive and other areas of the crime, why haven't we seen, an explanation from, we'll say, the coroner saying, you know, this many people were shot with this caliber versus that caliber, accounting of the shells in the room?
Well, I thought we'd get that with the body, with the, you know, listing of the bodies or listing of the deaths.
Right. We did not see that.
That's kind of what I was looking for, that package of information that you usually get.
So, do you expect that information to still come out at some point?
Oh, I think it will. Yeah, I think it would have to. And I really don't see any No matter what the end game objective is of the people that have a chokehold on the information, I don't see that information being of any value or significance being maintained.
No, but it would definitely be interesting to, you'd imagine of all the facts they can establish that they would, secure and get out the ones that they can and they know. Maybe this is like what you say. The fact that the FBI came in, and from what I understand, even the local FBI chief was taken off the case right away, and it was given to, Washington, D.C. types.
And I think that's highly suspicious when that happens, when you have this usurping of a SAC, of a local field office, of an FBI field office, and it goes to D.C. One could say, well, given the scope of and the magnitude of the event, that's possible. But even that chain of command to me seems a little bit cumbersome. And why would somebody like McCabe be put in that position to oversee that directly? That to me doesn't seem a proper use of the time. That's just my view.
No, and there's still a lot of unanswered questions. That we'll continue to look at and report as the information is forthcoming. Up next, we have coming on Greg Jackson, gregjackson.com, G-R-E-G-G, gregjackson.com. He is going to come on with us and give us his perspective on a number of issues, and then Pastor Billy Crone in hour number 3. He's actually from Las Vegas, and we're going to get into some interesting areas with him, too. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back after this network break.
Greenovative. Go to HagmanReport.com. Click on the link to Greenovative. But what Greenovative is, it's a small company in Florida. They created something called the G-Mag Power Cell. It produces electricity by adding salt water to this unit that recharges rechargeable batteries. It's the coolest thing you'll ever see in your life. It's really neat. Really a super device. All right, you need just 2 teaspoons of ordinary table salt, a little water, but a bang, you're charging your rechargeable batteries. Super G-Mag Chargeable is affordable, it's lightweight, weighs about 8 ounces, it's durable, it's EMP proof, and it's environmentally friendly. Yeah, that it is. It'll provide safe and convenient power for recharging 6 AA batteries off the grid when other power sources aren't available, anywhere, anytime, in any weather, day or night. Go to greeninnovative.com. That's greeninnovative.com. Folks, in these uncertain times, it just makes sense to have a sustainable backup method for accomplishing one of life's most important tasks, and that's preparing food. This is the way to go. There is nothing better than a Minuteman rocket stove from MinutemanStove.com. We all need a way to cook and a method to process water. I mean, think about it. Think about the many things that could happen to you. Minuteman rocket stove can provide your family or group the perfect solution. It's small, lightweight, wood-burning, and every bit as powerful as a kitchen stove. It's smoke. Fully self-contained for clean storage and transport. Because it's so efficient, it cuts down on your wood gathering and processing chores to a tenth what would be required if cooking the old-fashioned way over an open fire. So don't rely on gas or fuel stoves. Prepare your family. Prepare for yourself. Order a Minuteman rocket stove today. It's going to make bad times much better. Folks, MinutemanStove.com. MinutemanStove.com. Need I say more?
You should have a Minuteman, the survival stove in an ammo can.
For investors, timberland has become the symbol of safety. Global tropical timber demand continues to surge as the world's population increases. The need for managed, sustainable timber production forests has never been greater. When stock markets crash, trees keep growing. Direct ownership of fully managed tropical timberland acreage is now available to accredited investors. Prime, valuable hardwood groves close to the beautiful Costa Rican border generate and maintain superior long-term wealth. Consider visiting our forest plantations. Qualified accredited investors should go to PreciousTimberProfits.com or dial 855-888-6288 for more information. Call 855-888-6288 or visit PreciousTimberProfits.com. This announcement does not constitute either an offer to sell securities or a solicitation of an offer to purchase. Offering made by prospectus only. 855-888-6288, PreciousTimberProfits.com, PreciousTimberProfits.com.